Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Today is Tuesday, November 16th. And John, I'm gonna be honest, I almost forgot the introduction because it's been that long.
But the prodigal son returns. Austin, welcome back. In your absence, we had some great guests, and but you know what? You know, you came back. Hoops, our other prodigal son, returned, and the football team is playing for some big games. So you're just in time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, on one hand, really bummed that I missed the gloating opportunity after the 37-33 game. On the other hand, couldn't be happier that I missed the post-Purdue meltdown chamber that I would have been in. I have to say, just quickly on the Michigan game, just to give my two cents, because I'm sure people are wondering. that was incredible. I was so thoroughly unwell during the second half of that game. So I'll give just a quick story. So I was actually flying during the first quarter. And let me give one piece of advice here. Just don't do it. Like, if you're going to fly during a game and that you actually really care about, like this Michigan State game, I love my wife now very much. So I let her schedule a flight, perhaps an oversight. So first tip would be make sure you check your flight times versus the football schedule. Second tip, if you're going to be there on the flight and this is unavoidable, just go radio silent. Like, I should have asked my father-in-law to simply record the game and just gone radio silent, picked it up there, been all good with everything, because the first quarter of that game, I'm sure, was just horrific to watch in person. I guarantee you it was worse to just see the box score updating and to be getting texts from you and seeing all of the tweets just saying, oh no, oh God, 93-yard touchdown to Andrell Anthony, and just being like, you know what, just take the plane. You know what I mean? It was like, God, take the wheel at this point. Watching, I will say, so I got back to my now in-laws house probably about halftime, got to watch the second quarter on my phone. So I got to have a full-on panic attack when Aiden Hutchinson almost, or Ojabo, whichever one it was, almost had that game ender at the end of the first half. Great call by the refs, by the way. Really, I thought they nailed it. I was having a panic attack during that. Got to the in-laws house. Got to watch the second half there. Starts out, we've got like 7 or 8 people staying in the house. Everyone's in the living room with me. And I'm I'm really not
good.
Seeming like a mentally healthy individual at that point in my life.
And you're trying to make good impressions all the way around.
I'm trying, like, yeah, like, you know, I've known them for years now. They love me still, but I'm still just like, oh boy. And so, you know, Michigan goes up, I think it was 30-14. And I think
insurmountable lead.
I think I said ball game out loud to my father. I'm like, that's it. Like, I thought it was over. I'm sure I'm not the only one, but, they score, you know, start to come back a little bit, and I'm like jumping around, I'm moving, I'm falling to the floor, I'm everything. Next thing I know, I look around and everybody's gone. My at the time fiance, both in-laws, everybody's just left because they can tell that I'm simply not able to be around people at this point in time. And so it keeps coming, they keep, you know, creeping back, and then I am doing all of the motions of somebody that's screaming at the top of their lungs with no sound, which I think makes me probably seem like an absolute psychopath.
Why? Because you thought they were there?
I thought everyone was sleeping. I thought everyone was taking a nap. Like, I seriously thought, I was like, oh, it's, you know, it's whatever. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Everyone's probably just taking a nap, or the babies are down, or whatever. And because no one said anything. They just all left. They just weren't there anymore. I missed the transition period. Turns out they were all just in different rooms, leaving me to my lonesome. And then literally game ends. Ashley, my now wife, runs in and is like, they won. Like, oh my God, aren't you happy? She's like, oh, no. You know, and everyone kind of like comes out of the woodwork and they're like, hey man, you all right? Like, way to go, buddy. You won.
Did you play it off like you didn't care? You're like, nah, I mean, it's like whatever. Like, no.
I couldn't put words together. Like, I couldn't put sentences. That was, and again, I know we've lost since then. I know we've got other stuff to talk about here. But, like, I really think that was that's a top, I don't know, man, 3 MSU over Michigan game. I think it's got a very real case at the number one game.
It's up there.
That was, I think the best one for me. There will never be a better one than Trouble with Snap. No moment will ever be as hilarious as that. But the Kenneth Walker 5 touchdown game against Michigan. Ugh. I mean, that'll live in a very special place in my heart for a long time. So that's my opening monologue. And now we have more stuff to talk about, but I just wanted to give everyone an update on that. And guess what? Didn't watch a snap of the Purdue game. I was busy getting married. Nothing. I wouldn't let anything ruin that game for me. So I feel like 2 sets of good decisions there.
I think my favorite part is, knowing that you were getting married that day, being fully conscious that you were probably at the altar and yet still texting you all of my anger. Knowing it wasn't going to go anywhere, but it needed to be out of my body.
Yeah, but listen, I am the void. You know what I mean? Like, I should give out my – well, no, I won't do this. But, you know, I if anybody just wants to tweet their angry thoughts at me, as long as they're not directed towards me, I'm okay with being your anger sponge.
Whatever you need, man. Oh, shoot. Yeah. So, yeah, since then, and we mentioned, you know, Purdue lost, no big deal, which is we all calmed down and realized. It's all still in front of us. Basketball team lost to Kansas but bounced back against Western. Let's talk about that really quick before we get into the huge football week and recap and what's to come. Because, you know, as you mentioned, the Kansas game, or I did, it was left a lot to be desired. There were some areas where we were like, okay, there's something here. And then they played Western, and don't get me wrong, Western Michigan is a very poor team. I don't know if they're going to win 8 games this year. Doesn't really matter to me because you saw a lot of good. You saw a lot that could be cleaned up, and that's my favorite part is Michigan didn't play particularly well, and they won by 44. And I don't remember – well, I know last year they certainly didn't beat anyone by those margins. You know, this doesn't necessarily mean it translates to this being a much better team than last year's team, but you can certainly take away the fact that they didn't really play that well. They're still definitely, you know, kind of figuring themselves out as most teams are, but they won by 44. And like, I don't know, there are nuggets in there that you can take and carry over to the next game, the next week, the next month. And some of those are still to be determined, but, you know, for me, it's everyone is still trying to find their role a little bit, which is fine. But I think I wanted to ask you this question. I don't know. I think we all thought this starting package was pretty close to finalized. And then you start to see some of the backups come in and not just maintain the level, but surpass it. And I know it's only been 2 games, but I don't know. You got to start asking some questions, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I will tell you on that note, all the AJ Hogarth stock I bought last year skyrocketed.
Oh, man, you're a millionaire.
I got to tell I'm sure there's episodes of this show where I've been all over saying, I think Hogarth's going to be a good one. And he's showing why this year. I mean, he looks completely different. So, maybe Jason Novak is, his whole program is really just really coming to life, even in the basketball program. Sure. But he looks totally different, making jumpers. He's got that natural vision. I mean, he had 7 assists against Western. He had 4 against Kansas, led the team in scoring against Kansas, made 3, 17 points.
he's
so that
He's the guy that can get to the basket, and that's something
exactly
Michigan State has struggled with since Cassius departed.
Yep. Yeah, he gets downhill. I think, you know, just to go back to the Kansas game, tough debut for Tyson Walker. Got into foul trouble early. Didn't even attempt a three. You know, that's one that I kind of throw out. I think this Kansas team is going to be pretty darn good. Remy Martin's a really nice player. Obagi's really good.
Good.
He didn't even get much from Braun, who I know is a big player for them. And, they're arguably their best player. The small forward who was at one point almost committed or was committed to Michigan, Jalen Wilson, didn't even play in this game. So I think this Kansas team, you're looking at a bona fide top, like I think a championship type of contender in Kansas. And to be honest with you, MSU hung with them for a lot of this game. I think they were leading with the minute left in the first half, and then Kansas went on this little run. If I'm taking anything away from these first two games, though, well, I guess Kansas, it is what it is. You knew you were going to lose that game, so be it. Move on. Then you kind of combine that with the Western game, and it's tough to like look at trends or anything.
Sure.
But the scary part for me already, first thing that I'm looking at is that this team still can't shoot from three.
Yep.
4 of 19 against Western. 7 of 20 against Kansas, not great, but not awful, not great. That's going to be a theme, I think. That's going to be something. I know it was obviously almost historically bad last year. And you have some better shooters on this team. I don't think you're going to see a lot of nights from Max Christie where he goes 1 of 6. I don't think you'll get a lot of offers from Gabe Brown like you saw in this game. But these guys need, to put it bluntly, you can't have those nights against good teams if you're Michigan State. Quite simply, the margin for error talent-wise here is just not it's just not there, especially early in the season before some of these guys carve out their roles. I mean, Hogard Akins, I think, is showing that he is going to be a player that can absolutely get minutes here. I think the center rotation to me will be really interesting. I just don't know. I mean, like you know, I will say that I think the big takeaways, like if you kind of zoom out basketball and holistically, this is going to be, and I feel like we say it every year, but this is truly making me think of like a very classic Michigan State team where they are just a bunch of pieces at the beginning of the year, but maybe by the beginning of the Big Ten season, early to midpoint of the Big Ten season, they start to get rolling. Have a little bit of lull in the middle and then really start to peak at the end. I mean, we've seen this cadence from time Izzo teams time and time again. The pieces are here. You know, I think that's kind of what you were saying is the pieces are here for what could be a really good team that likes to run a lot offensively and a team that can play a little bit defense and cause some problems with their length. I like a lot of the pieces. It's just they're going to have to grow if they want to do anything of significance in a pretty good conference.
Well, you mentioned the 3-point shooting. That was the canary in the coal mine during the exhibition games. And if you're not hitting against Division II opponents, it's not just a bad day. You just can't shoot. So this is, as you mentioned, is going to have to be a Michigan State team that gets grimy buckets, junky buckets, AJ Hogard buckets, and they're also going to need to continue to rebound the way they have. They out-rebounded Kansas pretty handily, I believe by 40-30. They out-rebounded Western Michigan 58-28, and that's pretty impressive. For all that Hauser gets a lot of guff, specifically on defense, he rebounds really well against lesser than opponents. You hope that can take the next step. You hope Bingham continues to be an aggressive rebounder, not just a put my hands up and hope rebounder. And then everybody else, you kind of look around and say, okay, Gabe's athletic enough. Malik Hall's a grinder. Marvel's going to get his. It's just going to be found, I guess what I'm saying, is in the margins. In the last piece that this, we're going to continue to harp on the rest of the year, I'm sure of it. Who's the guy? because mm-hmm. they're going to be in a lot of close games because they've kept themselves in it, much in the way they kept themselves in it with Kansas, not quite to the finish line, but for a majority of it, despite being a lot less talented. There are about five teams in the Big Ten that are more talented than this Michigan State team.
Mm-hmm.
And Michigan State will keep it close with a lot of those teams for some of the reasons we already mentioned. Three-point shooting, but everything in between. So when push comes to shove and it's winning time, who's the guy? And right. I don't know. Like, Aaron Henry at least had a move, like a thing. I couldn't tell you. I wouldn't even know where to start. And so this team's going to have to figure that out together. And maybe it's a dude by committee, but that gets dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you really want to see Tyson Walker step up and be the impact player that they brought him in to be. I mean, your best teams, it's like, it always says it about the my best teams are when I have a coach on the floor. It's kind of the same. It's typically that's a point guard, right? Like, it's the guy with the ball in his hands. Same deal here. Your closer's got to be the guy who has the ball in his hands the most, or maybe the second most. That's going to inherently be Tyson Walker, Max Christie. Max Christie, that's an awful lot to ask out of a true freshman, although it is college basketball. That happens a lot nowadays. But, you're probably looking at one of those two. Because A.J. Hogard, I think for as much as he's going to give you until he gets a consistent jumper, you can get your late buckets and go get fouls.
That's the thing, though. That's the thing, Austin, is like.
And maybe he is that guy.
Is he the guy? It's two games in, right? But this A.J. Hogard is a completely different player.
Completely.
I take that back. He's the same player. He's more fit, and he's more under control, and he looks more a year more comfortable. But
you wonder – long term, I'll be interested to watch how much we see him and Walker in the backcourt together. Because I know Walker, one of Walker's big things is he can play a lot off the ball, too.
Well, a lot more to come. There's another big game this week, Austin. We're playing at Hinkle, playing at Butler. And this is a team that is maybe not your older brother's Butler, a team that is going to be certainly – not terrible, probably, but not nearly the level of where Kansas was. This is one I wish I could have gone to, actually. First of all, Butler, I think, is a bubbly team. I know we're only two games into this season, but I'm saying as far as talent is concerned, this is going to be a team that is going to need a few marquee wins. And, Michigan State is certainly a marquee name. I don't know if it'll be a marquee at the end of the year, but it'll certainly be something that I think they might need. They're 3-0 on the season so far. It's 9-point win over IUPUI. Yikes. I mean, they're IUPUIs. I just
said pooey pooey.
Terrible. 32-point win over Central Arkansas. They're much better. 11-point win over Troy. I don't know. All kind of building to this moment of what should be a pretty evenly matched game. This is a team that is going to be led by Jared Bolden. He's a senior. He's the guy that you start to wonder also, Austin, is Gabe Brown going to start to get that assignment, that Aaron Henry was burdened with as well? Who are we going to put on their guy? And Gabe certainly has the length to do that on a lot of different types of players. Just be curious to see if he steps up and says, I want it. Or, is this something you say you Max Christie's strength or length, definitely not strength. So TBD on that. You would hope that Marcus Bingham has a nice game. John Michael Malloy is a 6'10 kid, but besides him, there's not a ton of real height. So Marcus Bingham is going to have an advantage here. You wonder if he can start to use it, because Marcus Bingham loves himself a fadeaway. And there's no need. You're fading. No one can block the shot. You just need to, you don't have to fade. And he's kind of not quite maximizing his height in the way that we saw Aaron Henry maximize his height, you know, only being 6'6", but getting down to the basket and just kind of big boying you. I don't know if Marcus Bingham has the strength to big boy the way Julius Marble can, but we got to start to use that frame, especially against undersized opponents like a Butler. So it's not a knock on Bingham. I think he is a key in finding his way, though. But, yeah, I mean, this is one you'd like to win. I mean, they should definitely be able to compete. This is one I think that you would look back at the end of the year and say this one might help with the tournament resume as well.
Yeah, I mean, this would be – yeah, I mean, I, you know, without having had watched Butler play yet and looking kind of at their team, I mean, their three leading scorers, Chuck Harris, Jair Bolden, and Jaden Taylor are all under 6'4".
Yeah.
So it's a very much a small three-guard team. Bryce Nzay is kind of like their four, but he checks in at 6'7", and Ty Gross really is their center. And he's at all of 6'8".
He's not very.
There's just simply not a lot of size here. And you already pointed it out against teams, you know, a Kansas team with some size. David McCormick, big center. MSU more than held their own on the glass. I would expect them to dominate the glass in this game. It's just, I mean, it's going to. Talking about Michigan State basketball every year is more or less the same conversation. Can they limit turnovers, and can they shoot? Those are like the two conversations since Cassius Winston left that we've had. If they can make shots and be somewhat efficient on offense, get out and run a little bit and then win, you know, get those – I'll put it this way. Defensively, if they can make Butler one and done, get out and run and get some easy baskets, going to go a long way towards winning this game. Offensively – again, that transition offense is huge. The offensive glass, again, a place I think they have a huge area of opportunity. Bingham, to your point, very much a player could have a big game here. Personally, I'm looking at Joey Hauser because Joey Hauser is another dude who's been dominating glass thus far, had 12 rebounds against Western Michigan, and should be in line for another big game here. So this is one where if your front court struggles in this game, it is a big red flag for the rest of the year because this front court doesn't have – it's at depth. It just doesn't have – it doesn't have a bona fide star right now. And again, I think this – you know, to me, this is one where you've got to win those battles. Otherwise, it's – you know, you're in for a long year. So as much as I respect Baylor – or Baylor, God, Butler.
Do you respect them?
I guess not. I do respect Baylor. This is a game I think Michigan State should be able to go in and win. And to your point, this one at the end of the year, it's tough. My last point of this game, I'm interested to see if they try to go small at all in the backcourt and play some of those 2-point guard lineups.
You know, Austin, you talked about the turnovers and I just have a quick thought on that. You wonder why is this, not just a problem. This is not an aberration. This is kind of part of the gig with Tom Izzo now. That's just what kind of comes with Tom Izzo teams. And unfortunately for him, that's going to be associated. You have to ask yourself why. Why would this a really talented program consistently struggle with that one thing that seemingly most programs don't? And I don't know if this is the answer. But I'll give a thought. Michigan State is a team that defensively, as you already talked about, the scheme, we'll talk about defensive scheme a lot in this podcast, I think. The defensive scheme for the basketball team is force straight up man-to-man, a little bit of switching, and force the team to take jump shots. And if not, if they get it to the post, really make them earn straight up over the top. And then everyone crashes for a rebound, so there's no offensive rebounds. It's worked. It's worked for two decades. MSU is consistently one of the better defensive teams in the country. And I think when you practice that every day, that means you're not practicing against anyone who's overplaying the dribble, who's jumping passing lanes, who's really providing any type of ball pressure of any significance beyond the three-point line. And, you know, when you don't practice against that kind of stuff, even if you know how to do it, it's just a different thing in the game, and it's turned up to 11 all of a sudden, and you haven't simulated it the entire year. You remember the Illinois game, was it 3 years ago, when MSU had closing in on like 25 third turnovers, maybe more. It was an adventure. And I'm not saying that that is where we're at today. I just wonder if it's because this is a program that practices a very different style, and they don't really prepare for that type of defense, and that leads to some problems.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something very real about that. I mean, people always bring it up about Syracuse's zone, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't practice against it, so teams aren't familiar with it. They run it so well that, you know, you struggle with it. I think there's probably something to be said for MSU doesn't face a ton of great ball pressure in practice, and it's come back to bite them in the last few years. And so I think that'll be a theme to look for. Three-point shooting will be a theme to look for. Can we get somebody in the front court that can, and that might be Gabe Brown even, that can be like a consistent force? And then who grows? I think we've already seen Hogard take a step, clear a step forward so far this year. I think we've seen that Jaden Akins is going to be a contributor as a true freshman. Max Christie, obviously, is somebody that can be there. But who of these, and you know, I include Tyson Walker in the new faces, but who of these old faces is going to, aside from Hogard, really step up? Is Joey Hauser going to take a next step and add something to his game? Is Marcus Bingham finally going to learn something offensively? Is Gabe Brown going to become more than a corner three drive and dunk guy? To this point, haven't seen a lot of that from any of them. And you have to wonder if that's, you know, going to change it all moving forward. Because again, you said it earlier, there's at least five teams in the Big Ten, probably about five, that are more talented than this team. But that doesn't mean that Michigan State can't beat any of them on a night in and night out basis. We've seen them do it before, but they are going to have to execute. They're going to have an identity. They're going to have to play their own brand of ball in order to win those games, because they don't have that top flight talent like they may have had in the past. So those are all things I'm looking for. But this Butler game would be a real nice first one to get. Not as it would probably put Michigan State very close to the top 25.
Austin, this was great to have you back this segment. What do you say we take a commercial break? We've tried those. Yes. Long gone. I don't know how well they've gone, but we'll see. Let's give it a shot.
We're gonna try it. All right. 3, 2, 1. Then we're back. Okay.
Yeah.
Basketball out of the way. We got a lot more of that this year. What we don't have a lot more of, football.
Maybe. Wow. Maybe you say that. Maybe. Wow. I don't know. Could be. Maybe. Start it up.
I don't know, Jim.
You know, Michigan State did play this past week against Maryland, a team that not so great, but you know what? A lot better than I think the royal we, give them credit for. They're 5-5. That is not a good team. That is not an awful team. Okay. And MSU won handily, 40-21, in a game that maybe felt a little shakier than it actually was, considering the final score. There seems to be a lot of nervous Nellies about the defense here. And I think when your offense is scoring 40 points a game, we're focusing on all the wrong things.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, I do want to talk about this game specifically.
Let's do it.
Well, yeah, but my first overall note is to the Michigan State fan base. Like, who are we? Who do we want to be? Like, you made such a good point. Michigan State scored 40 points in this game. Let me take you back to literally last year and the preceding decade. But let's talk about the offense, or what you would maybe, what whatever this excuse for an offense was, even in Michigan State's best years. And I wish I had looked this up before we signed on. I don't know how many times they topped 40 points with Connor Cook as quarterback. How many? It can't possibly have been that many. And yet here they are averaging damn near that every single week. And all of a sudden we're upset about the defense. Listen, pick a side. Which one, what's it going to be? You can't, we're not Ohio State. We'll obviously talk about, we're not Alabama. We're not Georgia. We don't get to have, and so few do, get to have these perfect teams that are great on both sides of the ball. You need to be comfortable with one or the other, as we were for so long with this dominant defense and this LK offense. You got to pick one and understand that there are flaws with the other. And to be quite honest with you, when you look at the numbers, much like when you look at a starting pitcher in baseball, an ERA, maybe not the most telling of stats anymore. There are some other ones. Same deal goes for this defense, where you get the real value of what this unit does when you get past some of these surface level numbers. In this game in particular, surface level numbers, 21 points. Okay. Where's the complaint? Mm-hmm. I don't see it. You get below to some of the other numbers. And once again, I'm not that mad about this team. Michigan State's defense does is they give up the short pass. We've talked about this so many times, but they give up those underneath passes, but they don't give up anything big over the top. They haven't been beaten deep over the top, like on a true bomb. And again, I didn't watch Purdue. Again, hand up. I haven't seen it happen this year. Now, there was the big play by Andrell Anthony, but that was not he wasn't running straight down the field. He ran across the formation and just Xavier Tenderson took a horrible angle. Like, they don't get beat over the top. So they're limiting those big plays in order to keep things in front of them. Now, it works against teams like Maryland, where they shoot themselves in the foot, they drop a pass, they get tackled behind the line of scrimmage, whatever it is, they don't make all the right decisions. But when you look at these numbers, a couple things we pointed out all year, the reason why Michigan State does that is because they'd rather you try to do it that way than try to run the ball. And teams don't even try to run the ball anymore and control the clock because Michigan State stuffs them. Maryland ran for 97 total yards on 25 carries. Now, that stats are counted a little bit weird in college football, where I believe sacks are taken out of rushing instead of out of the whatever. So these numbers may be slightly misleading, but the fact of the matter is they held another team to under 4 yards a carry, way under that. Offensively, Tua Fast, Tua Furious, Tagovailoa threw the ball 48 times for 350 yards. That's okay. We want them throwing the ball that many times. You're making them execute time and time again. And when you open up most college quarterbacks like that, they're going to make a mistake. And that's exactly what Tagovailoa did, throwing that huge red zone interception. I mean, he had pressure in his face all day. Had a couple of intentional grounding calls. Honestly, the defense in this one played really well. And a couple other things personnel-wise, John, and then I'm going to hand it over to you. What this defense requires is really athletic linebackers and really good tacklers in the secondary. The tacklers in the secondary have been there all year. I think I saw Darius Snow miss his first tackle in this past game.
Yeah.
Henderson, great tackle. Gross, great tackler. Ronald Williams, tremendous tackler. Kimbrough's fine, but Chuck Brantley always competes, even though I know he didn't play in this one or the one I think he might be done for the season. But fact of the matter is they've got that. They've got a great defensive front four against the run, another thing that's good to have. They also typically have one really athletic linebacker in Kawarius Crouch. He did not play in this game, which is why you saw so much Ben Van Summer and so much Noah Harvey. Now, to Harvey's credit, made a play when he needed to make it, one of the bigger plays in the game. But if you notice Ben Van Sumeren in space against Crouch in space, you'll know how they took a gigantic step back in that athleticism category, and it showed up in this game a little bit. Without that athleticism at linebacker, you end up with a lot of the stuff that happened last year when you were trotting Chase Klein and Harvey out there, getting beat to the outside with runs, getting smoked in pass coverage. That hasn't been as big of an issue this year because of that athleticism of not only Crouch, but Cal Halliday as well. And because they didn't have their Crouch element in this one, it definitely came back to bite them. So let's not get ahead of ourselves and get super critical of this defense, because while, yes, they give up yardage, that's by design. And honestly, if you're going to complain about them giving up 21 points to a bowl team, I hope you can find something that brings you happiness. Godspeed.
Austin, we missed you, man. Appreciate that. That was well said.
That was a speech.
Sorry. You asked, you know, how many 40-point games did we have with Connor Cook? I believe 13. And I think
in 3 years.
In 3 years. And then from 2016 to 2020, I should say it had five.
This five.
Year, five. Five. In 2016, 17, 18, 19, and 20. Okay. So I'm not saying that we needed to be okay with that. It's just, I think it's okay to not, I mean, people want to get mad, get mad. I'm not going to gatekeep your emotions, but like, it's not worth it, man. Like, this team just beat the piss out of a bowl team, and like, they did it with, you know, average talent on defense. That's what's most, so beautiful about this, dude, is you got a team that on the defensive side, these coaches have come in and they've done something, created an opportunity for Michigan State to be in a position to be in a college football playoff conversation in mid-November. That's insane.
Yeah. That's
insane. When you look at rosters to rosters across the board, the whole two deep, four deep, whatever you want. These coaching staff took this talent, defensive talent, which has some really nice pieces, but also has a lot of areas where they need to get better and improve from a personnel standpoint, not just from a tactical standpoint. And they put them in a position in so that MSU could be 9-1. And if that means you're going to see a lot, be last in the country in pass, giving up passing yards, it's by design. It's by design.
Guys, take a step back for a second. I do want to dive into the offense here because they deserve a lot of credit for how they played in this game. Michigan State is 9-1, John.
I know.
You said that. On this podcast, I said the eternal optimist, which is not typically my MO, but I said I think it's not – out of this world ridiculous to think that they could end up winning 8 games. In 10 opportunities, they have already bested that. And I think that gets lost on people. Like, I understand that the expectations can change as the year goes because, you know, this team is better than we thought, quite frankly. However, when you look at – however, when you frame it this way, this is a different way to look at it. The worst thing that could happen this regular season, the worst outcome sitting here today, is that Michigan State goes 9-3 with a win over Michigan. If I told you that at the beginning of this year, that I can guarantee you that happens. Every single person that's listening to this, myself included in this, everyone, the royal we, as you said, everybody would have done that in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat, just about any season, I would consider signing up for a package like that. My new yearly subscription to Michigan State football. And yet people are getting frustrated. It's okay to get frustrated. But like the fact that Michigan State is in the quote unquote in the hunt graphic or getting talked about, the fact that we're getting upset about Michigan getting rated ahead of them in the college football playoff when it doesn't matter at all, and the fact that it literally makes no difference because Michigan State is everything in front of them in the middle of November is insane. It is insane. And so let's be mature. Let's take a half step back, big, deep breath, and just enjoy the fact that we are even in this that the expectations have reached the point that they've reached, because it's quite frankly incredible.
It is a dream season so far. And Maryland played right into Michigan State's hand. You know, MSU wants your quarterback to throw 50 times a game.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, the reason why is because, frankly, college quarterbacks aren't good, dude. They're not. Like, there's a reason only, like, two of them maybe, you know, actually find any semblance of success at the next level per year, right? And that might be even be a lot when if you want to subjectively talk about what a success mean.
Right.
The reason they're not very good, and so you say, hey, man, why don't you throw it 50 times and see how that works out for you? And none of them are going to be like man-to-man over the top. So you don't even get to rely on your athletes to go make plays for you. You're going to have to take what we give you. And you're going to have to never get greedy. And Cade McNamara, last play, interception, trying to get greedy.
Oh.
Right into the hands of Michigan State. Right? I mean,
yeah.
For all intents and purposes, everyone wants to wax so poetic about how well Cade McNamara played, which he did. Played right into the Michigan State's hands. It's exactly what we want him to do. Did not want Hassan Haskins and Blake Corum to be winning that game for them. Cade McNamara would have to win that game for him. Couldn't do it. To his little brother? Couldn't do it. 350 yards, you'll point at and say, he tore him up. Did he? Because the goal for Michigan State defense is, you're going to get yards. We're going to let you get yards. We want you to have to execute underneath. The problem, and here's where it gets a little shaky for Michigan State. They want you to have to earn long drives, because mm-hmm. long drives are so difficult at this level to sustain. The watch out is how fast Maryland scored on their three drives. Took a total of about 3 minutes and 40 seconds of game time for all three drives combined. That can't happen. It happens so fast. And I'm not going to make excuses for that for this defense, but, you know, you talked about how there was Crouch was missing. That is, I think, a much bigger deal than people will realize. Noah Hardman mm-hmm. played really well, you know, for all of his limitations. But when you start to play at a level and speed that this type of scheme is going to ask of linebackers, it's really hard between the 30s. But then once you pack it back in that red zone, it's a little easier on them, right? So, and then guess what? Where did Noah Harvey succeed and play well? Right there. So these coaching staffs are putting the personnel they have in positions that they can succeed. And that's why you're going to see 10-yard cushions on corners. It's not going to be fun. It sucks. It's not fun to watch. I get it. It's like 3rd and 10, and you're like, why are we off the line of scrimmage? Hey, I'm not going to tell you that that's good. I'm going to tell you that the goal is to not allow any explosive touchdowns.
Yep.
That's it. Just keep literally.
And it's worked.
And it's worked. That's how they beat Michigan, is they get down to the red zone and made them kick field goals. You don't win games with field goals, not against this offense.
Well, that's just it. I think you hit on a key point. This defensive scheme works because of the offense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because if this team couldn't score the way that they score, we'd be singing a very different tune, because you would have to play to that. You would just have to do more as a unit. But
right. But I think we saw game one, first play of the game, first game. Touchdown. They dropped 38 points
mm-hmm.
in that game. And all of a sudden, you could look up and down, and Mel and crew and Jay Johnson were like, we got guys.
Yep.
Okay. We can do what we want to do on defense now, because we can feel comfortable being a top 30 scoring offense in the country. That's pretty cool. Like, I'll take that.
I mean, I think what that does for any fan is, I don't think MSU hasn't really, they found themselves in one big hole this entire season. And again, I didn't watch Purdue. And they fought back from it against Michigan. And it wasn't like they went out and threw a bunch of bumps. They just kept their game plan. And that's where that keep chopping that whole neutral thinking, the way that Mel Tucker ingrained that into his program, I think you're seeing the dividends of it very, very concretely. You're 10 games into the season, you're still doing the same thing. This is who they are. And it's very exciting to watch. I mean, Kenneth Walker, he's all but guaranteed a spot in New York, whether he mm-hmm. wins the Heisman or not is honestly at this point, I won't call it irrelevant, but again, you talk about the in the hunt graphic, you talk about just even having the conversation period. The fact that Michigan State is going to send a player to New York for the Heisman ceremony.
That's a wild
is thing. Insane. Mm-hmm. It's insane. Who is the last player that we sent? Did Charles Rogers go to the ceremony?
Couldn't even tell you.
No idea.
Couldn't tell you.
Couldn't tell you. Even if he did, let's say he did. In what year? 2000? It's 20 years ago, and it might be the only other time it's ever happened. Cedric Irvin, maybe, or Lorenzo White, probably. Not mm-hmm. Cedric Irvin. Lorenzo White probably was the last one.
Sure.
Fact of the matter is that it is – unreal that this is even a conversation. And once again, he just keeps going on producing. I think the only thing that I'm a little bit concerned about maybe moving forward is his ankle, because his ankle was taped up during this game. And he's going to be getting a lot of carries in this upcoming week. So the fact of the matter is Michigan State is a great offense. The defense is doing what it's designed to do. And on to Columbus.
Well, you know, you mentioned injuries. It wasn't just Kenneth Walker III. There were backups that stepped up, and there were some backups that didn't fare as well. No Harvey came in for Crouch. That's a huge deal. Had some bad plays, had some great plays. Montori Foster came in for Naylor, scored a touchdown on the first play. Not bad, right? Would love to have Naylor back, but we can't just pretend that losing the fastest player on your team and arguably the most explosive offensive weapon, you know, from a pop the top standpoint, being gone, mm-hmm. not a huge deal. It is. That opens a lot of things up for Kenneth Walker, by the way. And then you had, you know, Jarrett Horst at left tackle. He's out indefinitely. Charles Brantley, likely gone for the season, unfortunately, already thin corners. Matt Coughlin, injured. Your kicker's hurt. And then the D tackle spot got a little thin. Simeon Barrow, I don't believe, played, and Maverick Henson nope. got ejected. Like, so all of these bad things are happening, right? You know, you're looking down the depth chart, things are getting thin. They still produce, you know, they still win by 19. I think we both agree, though. I think everyone would agree, listeners, you would really want full strength if you're going against Ohio State, because you're going to need that and maybe a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, those players you named, specifically Crouch and Horst. I'll go as far as to say I don't think you're going to win without Quaveris Crouch playing this upcoming Saturday. Yeah. Horst, I feel similarly about, but not to the same degree. But yeah, we'll talk about them in a bit. But yeah, you're right. Simeon Barrow, another really impactful player. So not only did MSU win this game, not only did they put up 40 points, give up 21, did it without a lot of really key players. And there's a lot to be said for that. So yeah, all in all, 9-1, not mad.
9-1. And quick Coughlin watch, as we mentioned, came in. He did kick extra points after Steven Rusnick, freshman walk-on, missed his first. I feel like it's a good time to remind everyone, if they didn't know, Coughlin has literally never missed an extra point. He's 143 of 143. That's pretty incredible, especially because you see what happens when you get walk-on freshman involved. So you hope Coughlin could get at least kick extra points this coming week, because they're going to need every point they can get.
Yes, that would be correct.
So as we move – right before we move to the national results that are on the Big Ten and the week to come, I wanted to point something out. We keep saying this because it's just so freaking awesome. I don't want to stop saying it because the dream season's still alive. 9-1. The world is in front of ours to take. Mel Tucker is a walking, talking hype video.
Oh my God.
Unbelievable. There's going to be a run on drywall, I think, this week in Michigan because so many MSU friends are just going to be running through walls. Like, this dude, he authentically just kicks ass. He says the coolest stuff. And I don't know how, when he says it, it's just cooler. But at the end of the Maryland game, as he's standing in the locker room, and MSU's Twitter account and Instagram put it out there for everyone, he's just standing in there as the players come in and just going, hell yeah, hell yeah, hell yeah. And he's dapping everyone up. And you know what? Hell yeah. He just beat the shit out of a bowl team. Hell yeah.
And then he keeps saying, not done yet. He's just the coolest dude. First of all, for your drywall issues, we all know we can save big money at Menards. So just I would assume you can NIL deal, anybody?
Oh man. I thought the pod was sponsored or something.
Might be now. Mm-hmm. Mr. Menard, hit me up. Who knows? This next commercial break could be a Menards commercial. Wouldn't that be divine?
Dude.
Anyways.
All I want to finish out with is if this past week you want to put it into terms that us dummies, Austin and I, can understand, which is basketball, the favorite song. Basically what we saw was this past week, that was the first round. That was the round of 64 of the NCAA tournament. You got the dub. We got the dub. You now we're the underdog. We're going into the round of 32. You're playing the one seed. Okay.
Yep.
You win that round, your Sweet 16 against Penn State. Elite Eight against Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game. College football playoff, there's the Final Four. And that's the situation. You won the first round, survive in advance. You're on to the next one. It's time you're at the national stage. Hell yeah. Let's go.
Hell yeah, baby. Hell yeah.
Oh, man. Austin, so I'm pumped. Do you think we should take a commercial break before we go around the week?
I think so. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Now we're back again. John, other games were played.
Dude.
Some of them very embarrassing.
Some of them. This is why we love college football. Truly, I can't get enough because of specific things like Kansas at Texas. 57-56 win in overtime for the Jayhawks.
I don't know. Like the only word I can think of is how. How in the world? How to so many parts of this? How do you, in general, how do you lose to Kansas? How are you down 35-14 to Kansas at halftime?
I don't know.
First of all, how does Kansas score 57 points on you in your own barn in the year 2021? How do you throw for 7 total touchdowns and lose? How does one of your receivers, Xavier Worthy, some of our friends in Ann Arbor might know him, have 14 catches for 152 yards and 3 touchdowns and you still lose? I simply don't understand. How do you allow the final touchdown, 2-point conversion, to be caught by a player for his first catch of his career? Kansas hadn't won a road game in the Big 12 since 2008.
2008.
I was in college. That's insane.
These kids, some of the kids on this team, the freshman for Kansas, quarterback, Jalen Daniels, which I'm sorry, this might be a Jalen Daniels podcast moving forward.
I'm in.
Kid is unreal. I highly encourage you to go watch his post-game interview. You just want to root for this kid. He is the most humble, smiliest. He's just all around. He's like Ted Lasso.
I'm already rooting for him.
He's Ted Lasso quarterback. Like, like he – And then at the end, you know, they were talking about, you know, hey, do you think your coach is going to take the red, you know, let you burn your red shirt to play? And he was like, after your performance, you know, you just the biggest win in, you know, Kansas maybe program history. And he was like, that's not a decision for me to make, and I trust my coaches implicitly because I trust their process. And I was like, are you joking me right now? If I'm 18 and I just – I couldn't even explain how fast I would have been kicked off the team with the words I would have said after that.
Like, yeah.
Unbelievable. That kid, let's see, in 2008, how old would he have been? I mean, if he's 18 now. Math hard, but five?
Yes.
5 years old is the last time Kansas won a road game in the conference. And it couldn't have happened against a funnier team, against Texas.
Oh.
You know, if this was against, you know, any other Big 12 team, it just wouldn't be as funny for me.
Let me tell you, I am embarrassed that I was ever slightly into Texas. They are 4-6. They've lost 5 games in a row.
They're miserable.
Like it's really bad in Austin right now. Their star runner, Bijan Robinson, is now out for the year, so with a dislocated elbow. Very real chance they do not go bowling. And to think that they paid like 20-something million dollars just to get rid of Tom Herman and bring in Sarkisian.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like they got what they had coming to them. Not necessarily because Tom Herman was this great coach, because I don't think, you know, he'd kind of worn out his welcome there, but you got to know better than to hire Sark.
You just
got to know better.
Yeah. Do you feel – first of all, what did he do that made you say, as the head of one of the biggest – maybe the biggest brand in college football, to say this guy can run a ship this big?
Yeah, right.
What?
Nick Saban. Nick Saban held a gun to somebody's head.
And then he wanted, and then we're just like, I don't know.
And they all hate him.
Yeah.
All the guys that play, like, it's, they're going to. The good thing everything's better in Texas. I hope that includes the bankrolls, because these guys are going to have to. You can't possibly keep him around. Everybody hates him. He's going to miss a bowl after in his first year. Like,
with this talent, with the roster,
with a very talented team, like a team that went. Let me remind you: 9-3, 7-3 last year, because they had a couple games canceled. Really maybe getting bailed out by the fact that they had their game against Kansas being one of the ones that was canceled. The only one that was canceled. So
dodged
a bullet there. I mean, look, if you look at their losses last year, a 2-point loss to TCU, a 4 overtime loss to Oklahoma, a 3-point loss to number 13 Iowa State. This program wasn't like in this horrible shape. And that was a year after winning the Alamo Bowl.
Dude.
Which wasn't exactly great. I mean, 8-5, but like.
And that was the weird back.
Oh, Sugar Bowl. That was the year. They should have given him a lifetime contract as soon as Sam Ellinger came on and said, we're back.
Oh, it's so funny, guys. I mean, I know. The other piece is just like, you feel good for Kansas. Like, you just.
Yeah.
Like, come on, like, as much as we hate their basketball program, no matter how much you hate Bill Self and the cheaters, you have to have some, if you have a heart, you can feel for how terrible their football program is. And I know we're waxing on this, but I have to share, because this is a weird stuff that I keep track of. And they're for very specific moments, just like this last time. You mentioned they hadn't won a game, an away game, since 2008, okay? They have won, in the last 13 years, 28 games.
Jeez, wait, wow.
28 games. 2008, they won 8 games. And since then, they've won 28 games. And they've lost 123 games. They're 8-104 in conference play since 2016. 8-104.
That doesn't even that seems impossible.
Oh, it gets worse. Of those 28 wins, 9 are against FCS teams.
Ugh.
They have 3 losses against FCS teams. So it wasn't always.
I like that stat the most.
9-3. They had a good season against FCS opponents. 9-3.
And then, they finished third in the conference.
That's right.
Against FCS opponents.
They got to go to a second tier bowl after an FCS season. And we talked about the road games. Since 2009, they're 4-64 on the road. I mean, the level of terrible is unmatched by any stretch. Rutgers is Alabama by comparison. Like, the gap is just so massive. And so we're all Jayhawks. I just rock chalk, baby.
Yeah, rock chalk football.
Okay. New Mexico State went into Bryant Kenny Stadium. Bryant Denny Stadium. And
Bryant Kenny, famous Sports Center anchor named Stadium.
My bad. Okay. They made a huge error, and they should have just taken the check and left, but they did something stupid and went up 3-0 on Alabama. And it didn't go well after that. Bama won 59-3. But this was a very much a stop the count moment for the Aggies. They had to, like, I'm not kidding. If I'm their head coach and you kick that field goal, I'm calling a timeout. And I'm going to go take photos. I want my team photo on the field taking photos of the scoreboard. I want to go full Michigan sideline, like celebrating the turnover. I'm spending all my timeouts just flexing on Bama. And I don't care if they get mad. They're going to win by literally as many points as possible anyway, no matter what we do. I'm flexing on them. I'm disappointed that didn't happen.
I think my only takeaway from this game is the screenshots live forever.
It's true.
The screenshots of this game, you were up 3-0.
You won.
On Alabama.
You won.
You absolutely won. You won time and time and time again. And Alabama, shame on you for ruining the story.
Dude,
shame on you.
How many rushing yards do you think New Mexico State had?
Negative 47.
Remember the sack adjusted stuff.
Don't know. 12?
9. 27. I don't know why that number is so funny to me.
Single digit really does hit a little bit differently. Here's a question I have for you. Does a single New Mexico State player make it out alive if they actually beat Bama? Do they get out of Tuscaloosa? Does the bus leave the city premises?
You just made a hypothetical that isn't plausible, so I can't even, like, answer. This is maybe the worst team in college football.
I'm just saying.
I can't imagine what type of scenario, like, without.
Does Nick Saban get fired?
So there was a really interesting, I should have followed him, guy on Twitter who had an amazing idea about, you know, how there's, like, relegation. We all agree should happen.
Oh, yeah.
But because it can't, there should be, like, a get fired bowl. And, like,
yes,
a team, like, let's say, like, the Clemson-UConn game that was this week. Oh. Dabo loses that game, he's fired. He loses his job.
Fair is fair.
It's not up to Clemson. It's just them's the stakes. Same with this one. Like, Alabama loses to this game, the staff's gone. They have to leave. It's over. The dynasty dies. I love these high-stakes situations.
Yeah, it would
No, they're unlikely, but I love the idea. It's must-see TV.
I was going to say it's like the something Axe Bowl. It just it's like the Oregon Axe Company Axe Bowl.
It's the Squid Game.
The Squid Bowl.
Someone will die. Your career will die.
One career ends here.
I think it's fantastic. Let's keep going because we've got a lot to cover. Oklahoma went to Baylor, and they are who we thought they were. There was really here's how you know PFF is not worth anything. They tried to create this little media network, I think, and they decided for content they were going to have a roundtable discussion on why Caleb Williams could win the Heisman. And I get that I'm a K9 fan, and I would go as far to say an apologist. That's ridiculous. And not 3 days later, this kid, who they're talking about how he could win the Heisman, literally gets benched for playing so poorly in his first real away game. And Oklahoma scores 13 points. I would have to say that's the least amount of points Oklahoma scored in, I would wonder, maybe a decade?
Quite some time.
Couldn't tell you.
Certainly since Lincoln Riley took over, I would imagine. I'm glad they lost. I'm done with Oklahoma. I don't want to do this anymore. I will say, I'm telling you, Dave Aranda is a really, really, really good head coach.
Dude.
And LSU would be, if I'm Washington, I'm calling, although USC. I don't think you would go there. If I'm USC, I'm definitely calling. My only question with USC is I don't know if he's not a charisma guy. Yeah. If I'm LSU, I'm calling him. I'm calling immediately as soon as I can because he was my defensive coordinator. I think he would be a home run hire for one of these big programs. I actually think, I don't know if he would leave to go to Washington. I know he has some West Coast connections. I think, he would be a very, very good head coach at Washington because you don't need that. I mean, Chris Peterson is like the perfect head coach there, and he's Mark D'Antonio, subdued personality guy. Aranda, the same thing. But he's young. He can recruit. He has put energy back into that Baylor program that was dead for a few years.
Here's the question.
He's done a great job, man.
But here's the question. If you're a coach at his level, but I think we all agree he's a good coach, do you want to put yourself in? You want to put yourself in the best position to take the next step in your career, which is getting to the playoff. Do you? Can you? Mm-hmm. Is it easier to do that in Washington? I don't know. I don't even think so. Like the Big 12 is.
Well, I don't know. I don't. The only reason I would say that I would maybe take Washington is because, well, it's a complicated question.
Yeah.
I would say the Pac-12 is going to be a much more prestigious conference as soon as Oklahoma and Texas are gone. The irony being that we just talked about both of them losing shitty games this past week. But I would think that Washington's already made a college football playoff. People forget. They got lambasted, but they made it.
Oops, DeMarco.
Folks. So I don't know. I think it might be a 6-1, half dozen the other. I mean, I personally think LSU would be stupid if they didn't give him a long look, but I'm not sure which way it'll go, but he's a really good head coach.
Notre Dame, still in the playoff hunt, beats the brakes off of a really high-scoring Virginia team. They beat them 28-3. That was a shock to me. Not that Notre Dame won. I thought they were going to win pretty handily, but holding Virginia to 3 points was, I think, you know, 6-3 Virginia team. Notre Dame needs to take advantage of every opportunity they have. Sarah Norris made a good point on the last pod about, like, Notre Dame, you know, long are the days where we just look at Notre Dame's record and go, oh, yeah, they're good. Their schedule's a little propped up, to her point, about playing all the service academies, you know, throwing another pendant here and there. And, you know, this ACC little thing is kind of garbage. You know, the teams they're playing in,
And as her other point that cracked me up was, we all have the internet now. Like, we can go, like, we can see it. It's not good. But at the same time, you know, I will say Notre Dame still is a national brand and maybe not a good track, but they have a path to the playoff if a few things break their way.
Yeah, I don't see it happening personally. I think, like you said, a couple things have to break their way. I think this is Notre Dame, unless they really choke, this should be their floor, should be this somewhat around the playoff conversation. Their roster is as talented as just about anybody's in college football. And I think the only thing that separates them from maybe the elites right now is that great quarterback play, which they, I guess Georgia doesn't necessarily have, but they don't have the dominant unit to make up for it otherwise. But yeah, the other part with Notre Dame is every time they've made the playoff, they've gotten their asses kicked.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're making it and doing anything with it. They need Notre Dame. I think when they have an actual quarterback, like an actual NFL quarterback, they could be right up there with anybody, in my opinion. They have the talent. Like you said, they have the schedule every year. I don't see any reason they can't be there, but they haven't had that in a long time. So, holding Virginia to 3 is impressive.
You know what's awesome, though, is MSU, same record as Notre Dame. And without a doubt, you know, this past week, MSU was voted the better team, you know, and
yeah.
From a program standpoint, I think that's a good thing, you know, just a prestige yes. thing. A really fun one broke out between NC State at Wake Forest. The Demon Deacons pulled it out 45-42. Wake Forest is fun. Dave Clawson has put together a plucky little program. And I just wanted to comment that seeing both of these teams ranked in the top 16 was very odd. I don't know if they are the two of the top 16 teams in the country, but then again, I don't know who's better. So yeah,
I basically know the top three, and then after that, it's a complete crapshoot.
That's dude,
another big takeaway here. Dave Clawson needs a job. Yeah. Somebody come get him, because this dude is another guy. It's another guy who I don't know if he's ready for a LSU. I tell you what, Florida opens up. I'm calling him. I don't care, man. I think a lot of programs, you could do a lot worse than Dave Clawson. If he's doing this at Wake Forest, also, by the way, letting a Heisman finalist walk and still doing this at Wake Forest, someone's got to come get him, because that is impressive.
Area of opportunity for Dave, retaining talent. Beyond that, there's a lot of upside. Texas A&M went to Mississippi Mississippi won 29-19. Austin, I only bring this one up because today I read an incredible scenario where there is a world where apparently there could be a six-way tie for first place in the SEC West.
Yes.
This result. And there's like a 0.2% chance of it happening, but that's way higher than I ever would have expected. So the chaos scenario is if Alabama loses to both Arkansas and Auburn, if Mississippi beats Vanderbilt and loses to Mississippi State, Auburn beats South Carolina, Arkansas beats Missouri and Texas A&M, Arkansas beats Missouri, and Texas A&M beats LSU. We would have a six-way tie for the SEC West at 5-3, and Auburn would go to the SEC championship game.
Great. Yes, that's what the world needs, is more Bo Nix football.
It'd be too perfect for this year, though.
I'm into it. I'm rooting for it.
Final one, Washington State went to Eugene. Oregon won 38-24. Relevant because Oregon holds serve and maintains a top four seed as we approach the final weeks of the season. So, I don't know, man. Is Oregon one of the best teams in the country? I don't know.
Man, that committee is all in on big-time wins because they are – I think Oregon is alive.
Are they, though? Because MSU's big time win over Michigan might not.
Yeah, true.
Oh, shoot. Another big time win for the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. 30-3 over the Indiana Hoosiers, who are they at the Texas point for us. We're like, this is embarrassing, man. Like, you're 2-8.
Dude, 38-9 loss Indiana, more like it. Mm-hmm. Losing by 35 at home to Rutgers, typically bad.
Arguably bad.
Summer, yeah, again, I'm no analyst, but that doesn't seem great.
I need a little.
You know what, though? I got to admit, I am enjoying it a lot. I'm really enjoying Indiana being bad because Indiana basketball has really just bothered me. Like it's the same as Michigan football where it's a completely undeserved confidence thing. Like, hey, we were great 50 years ago, so we should still be great type of deal. And that just, every time I try to, I'm like, oh, plucky little program, I remember that those are the same fans.
Fans are Notre Dame football fans.
So that makes them worse. but either way, it's all bad to me. So I'm enjoying that they were like, oh, we're number 17 in the country. And turns out it's like, nope, you have not won a Big Ten game yet. So
you know what's
goodbye.
You know what's wild is, you know, not that this is, you know, maybe where we need to even be at as a program. It's like, some years are just bad years. Like MSU sure. had 3-9 year. Who among us? Tom Allen's buyout is, I think, $28 million.
Mm-hmm.
That is the fifth highest buyout in college football.
Yeah, that's dude, good for Tom. I gotta give him credit, man. That's a hell of a grift you pulled there, buddy.
It's awesome.
Indiana really showing themselves for not knowing what good football looks like or how they didn't really know how to equate it, maybe at this
buddy,
point.
Let me tell you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wisconsin hosted Northwestern, and you're married into the Badger program now. 35-7. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin, don't look now, man. But that offense has gone from atrocious to average. And you pair that with a defense that is at the level of Georgia and Georgia alone, you got a decent football team. And I'm not saying they're good. And if you're new to the podcast, nobody is good. There's maybe one good team. We believe Georgia is good. Wisconsin's mm-hmm. defense is good. Is that fair?
Give me 1 second here. I'm pulling up who they've played lately because I just would like to see their schedule because, yes, it is exactly as I had expected. Here's where I give them credit. Holding Purdue to 13 points is good on the road. That's impressive. Uh-huh. You know what's not impressive?
What?
Northwestern stinks.
Yes.
Rutgers stink. Rutgers isn't that terrible. Iowa.
Rutgers to you.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I mean, listen, they have a very good defense. I am not putting them in the caliber of Georgia. I simply won't do it. But yeah, man, listen, they haven't given up more than 14 points since they lost to, they had their asses handed to them in back-to-back weeks by Notre Dame and Michigan. But since then, let's be real though, not exactly a murderer's row of opponents they've played since they started 1-3, Illinois, Army, Purdue, Iowa, Rutgers, Northwestern, Nebraska. Brings me to a point that I'll try not to harp on for too long. I am so mad at whatever deity or Big Ten know-it-all decided not to put Michigan State in the Big Ten West. I will never get over it. Michigan State would have been in the Big Ten championship game. They've been there twice. They would have made it at least two or three additional times on top of the two that they already made it. And it is infuriating to me because I watch Wisconsin just stumble into a 7-3 record. If they were in Michigan State's division, they would be 3-6, 3-5, math. Yeah. I don't know, but it's just, or 3-7. Wow. That's really stupid. Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. Fine. They'll go to the Big Ten championship game. They'll play Ohio State probably and then lose by 1,000. That's fun for everybody.
So here's a counterpoint to that thought, Austin. Does Michigan State reach the levels it had to beat Ohio State to become better programs than Michigan and Penn State? Does that happen if you're in the West?
I don't care. You're still in the Big Ten championship game.
No, no, no.
They made it there the year they made it and beat Ohio State. They were, those divisions didn't exist.
No doubt.
Because Ohio, you know what I mean?
I'm saying,
I get what you're saying. You want to be the best. You got to be the best. I respect that, and it makes games fun. But there is part of me that loves hanging banners and would love to just be clowning on, these second tier programs in the Big Ten. It'd be really fun.
Well, and I'm not saying that. I'm saying the Ohio State's level forced Michigan State to get better as a program. Like it raised the bar for them. And I don't know if you're going up against, Illinois and Northwestern, if that happens.
True.
I don't know. That's fair. All right. Let's keep moving. So Michigan went into Happy Valley, wins 21-17, and this was kind of a no win for Michigan because Penn State did not get ranked by the CFP committee. So this does not even count as a good win for them in the eyes of the committee. Don't let the media tell you that though. There was a parade thrown for Jim Harbaugh, seventh year coach, in scoring 21 points and overcoming, I believe, his first fourth quarter deficit since he's been there. Like, my God, have some standards. But
yeah,
good for them. Happy for him.
I mean, Penn State choked this game away. I mean, they should have been up 14-3 in the first quarter. And instead, I think they failed on a couple of fakes. Well, I know they were converted one fake punt, but then they failed on a fake field goal try. They should have put this game away early, and Michigan's not built to come back, when they're down early. So, but that's kind of what Penn State does. And James Franklin is so far out of there too, man. He keeps tweeting this 1-0 stuff. It's like, guys, it's only going to work for so long. I give them a little bit of credit for, Michigan, a little bit of credit for, punching back. We've seen them quit. In years before, but they were losing this game with like 5 minutes to go, and they fought back and they won, which is, that's great. But at the end of the day, this whole season boils down to one game for them as we've seen it, been ready to do all year. And again, I don't think Penn State's all that impressive, quite frankly. They didn't really impress me much at all this year, but, yeah. Hey, listen. It's way to go, Michigan. You won. That's great. I mean, the only thing I'll say again, impressively for me, not even impressively, it's like they have quit in that situation where they've been down so many times and they didn't quit. But anybody calling them special or anything like that is probably overstating the fact.
Ohio State beat the brakes off of Purdue, 59-31. This is only one stat I think they want to take away from this one because we're going to get into this a lot further in a minute. 5 of the 8 Ohio State touchdowns came on plays of 20 yards or more. And I know of a defensive scheme that is predicated on that specific thing not happening. Will it? No, I don't know. But I do know that it's built differently than Purdue's above average defense, decent defense, that tried to go mano a mano, and it ain't going to work. Mm-hmm. That's the difference between MSU's staff, who did lose to Purdue. Don't get me wrong. We talked about it last week's podcast about this. Their scheme is one of, if not the only one, that can really take advantage of the MSU's defensive scheme. The other one being if you're just elite on both sides of the ball, and there are like 3 teams that are that, Ohio State being one of them. But
you want to roll the balls out and go man-to-man against Ohio State up and down the field, is what's going to happen. You're going to lose by 30. That's what happened. So, I mean, I don't know what anyone thought. I don't know what Purdue was thinking. Maybe they just got a little, I don't know. They thought they were
I got a little fat and sassy after beating Michigan State. I mean, credit to them for putting up 31 points, but yeah, this is, you can't. The talent gap from any other team in the Big Ten to Ohio State is profound, especially when that other team is a team like Purdue. You're not going to line up and just play with them ever. No one is. Michigan's not. Michigan State's not. Penn State's not. Like, there's Bama and Georgia, and I don't even know who else. Probably just those two. Maybe Oregon, I suppose. Oregon, obviously, but like that's the caliber we're talking about here. You need to have something that you can do to compete with them, and Purdue just doesn't have it.
Final game for the Floyd Rosedale Trophy, third best trophy in the conference, only fourth best only to the Land Grant, obviously Paul Bunyan and the All Brass Spittoon. But the Floyd Rosedale went back to Iowa City. Only reason I want to talk about this one is Iowa's 27-22 win, where they were outgained, out first down, out time of possession, out everything. I watched this game with my in-laws while MSU Maryland was on my phone. And oof. I deserve attaboy. I deserve a pat on the back. That's some good in-lawing, if you ask me.
That's some real good in-lawing right there.
That's right. I mean, this game was not aesthetically pleasing, folks. This was.
Yeah, I mean, three of the four teams you're watching on your two screens there are Iowa, Minnesota, and Maryland. I mean, God, if that's not a Big Ten moment, I don't know what is.
Yeah, that edible needed to hit and hit fast. okay, let's jump. The Nebraska and Illinois are on a bye this week. We got some big national games, but everyone's playing in the Big Ten. We'll go quickly. Games of really relevance to Michigan State fans are few, you know, when you're up towards the top. Arkansas at Alabama, you know, who knows if Arkansas can really hang. They've certainly overreached expectations, kind of fallen back down to earth a little bit, but the SEC West is pretty damn tough. So,
yeah, come on, Hogs. Let's go. Pig, baby.
Oregon has to play Utah twice, you know, most likely. They win this game, they're not out of the woods. They're still probably going to have to play them again in the Pac-12 championship game. That always gets funny, you know, where, like, you obviously you're playing to win. You have to win. But when if you know you're playing a team again, you know, what types of advantages are you hiding? You know, it's just interesting to think about.
Yeah, I think the thing is for – this might be the one where Oregon blows it, though. Like, they can't lose either of these games, which means they have to put all their cards on the table in both of them. So, one way or the other, I'm a known Oregon stan, but it feels like there's another shoe getting ready to drop.
Austin,
and I just don't know when or where. This might be it.
This is our national game.
Yeah, big time.
SMU heads to Cincinnati. This is probably Cincinnati's. This is a decent test, and Cincinnati's got to be praying that SMU gets ranked 25th or something, because they're not bad. I think they have two losses, but this is one. If they're not ranked, it's going to be a tough game, you know, and they're only going to get dinged like they always get dinged. They're a 12-point favorite, and so even that score, if they cover and win by 13, and people won't realize that SMU is actually decent, they're going to get dinged for it. So
Cincinnati has to ask themselves, much the way Michigan State did at one point in time, is it worth making it to get beat by 100 by Georgia? Because if they fall backwards into this whole thing, that's what will in all likelihood happen. I would say yes.
Shannon Sharp.
Then you can say you made it, but.
Shannon Sharp would say, ain't no problem. That ain't no problem.
Ain't no problem. Mm-mm.
Wake Forest.
I agree.
Wake Forest goes into Death Valley, and I would love for Dave Clawson to beat Dabo.
Oh, man.
Love that.
Strong agree. I'd like to see anybody beat Dabo. Sure. But, yeah, that would put the capper on a very, very weird season for both of these teams. And to be honest with you, I hope it happens because Dave Clawson deserves a good job. If he goes in and beats Clemson, even though this isn't a good Clemson team, again, I think he's getting calls from LSU. I think he's getting calls from Florida. I think he's getting calls from a lot of these teams.
Dude, if Wake Forest wins out, wins the ACC, which they should, they're not out of it. They would have been undefeated in conference. The North Carolina loss was not a conference game. That was scheduled by both programs because they didn't have each other scheduled this year in conference.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that did not count. That was a non-conference loss. So not out of the woods. Let's go to the Big Ten quickly. Rutgers at Penn State, huge rivalry game, as you heard when MSU was playing at Rutgers. Their student section would often chant F Penn State, and I don't think Penn State knows that Rutgers exists. So that's interesting.
Yeah, this is like the Sopranos Bowl. That's the way I think of it.
Oh, man. Another 11 a.m. kick. Purdue at Northwestern, your Chicago Big Ten team. This game's at Wrigley Field. Okay, sure.
All right. Let's all be careful about the Ivy, okay? There's a very difficult, very hard brick wall behind that. Let's not forget that.
Absolutely.
All about player safety.
That's true. Illinois heads to Iowa in a game that I don't care about. You got anything on that?
It feels like an Illinois win.
Really?
As stupid as their season has been?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing.
They'll lose by 1,000. It's one of the two.
Here's the thing. I think Iowa is, which, by the way, if you notice their ranking.
Yep.
They're right. 20.
It's a sweet spot.
Frisky Iowa. Home
state. Taxes Iowa ranked between 18 and 22.
We missed you, Iowa. Here's the funny thing. There's like a two-way, whatever. Doesn't matter what the tie is in the Big Ten West. Wisconsin already beat Iowa, so they have the tiebreaker in that head-to-head. Wisconsin loses a game. It's Iowa goes to the Big Ten championship. I'm sorry, they're bad. They are not.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Nebraska heads to Wisconsin this week. That's my OAP game. I like Nebraska there. They've had a week off. They got a vote of confidence from their coach. They know he's their coach, at least for next year. I don't think Nebraska is 3-7 bad. I think they're more like 6-3. I think Nebraska is going to make this one interesting. I think Nebraska might even win this one.
It's going to be horrific to watch. Because both of these offenses, you say what you want about them getting better, they're both the worst units for both teams. Yeah. And Wisconsin's defense, like you said, has been playing lights out. Nebraska's defense, I think, is super talented, and both those offenses are terrible. So, yeah.
I think Wisconsin looks ahead and has their eye on Goldie. I think Nebraska is better than they are, and all of a sudden, going into the final weekend, Iowa will have the inside track to the Big Ten West title, which is embarrassing.
Just beyond. God, can we get there, please? God damn it. That would be so awesome.
Minnesota at Indiana. This should be a layup. Indiana's given up. They're done.
They had three players throw 10-plus passes last week. That's typically bad.
Tom Allen, just if you want to throw passes for Indiana this week, just show up at the stadium.
Just make it a pizza party. Don't make your players play.
And then
offer pizza to everybody that comes to the game, please.
Michigan travels to Maryland, and that game's on Big Ten Network. Michigan, a 15-point favorite, 2:30 in the afternoon.
I'll say this. Can I say something about this game?
I want you to.
Maryland is a big enough chaos team. Mm-hmm. That this is a big enough chaos spot.
Mm-hmm.
That this is an OAP-ish game to me.
No,
I do not think Maryland. Just hear me out. Okay. I don't think Maryland's good.
No,
but the aesthetics of this game are a few things that people are just sort of overlooking. Michigan is, yes, they came back and won the end. This is a mentally weak team. It's a mentally weak program. It's a chicken program. It's a puddle program. Jim Harbaugh is still complaining about calls from 2 weeks ago, which is So, the antithesis of what you're supposed to do as a head coach. You can be upset. Write as many letters as you want. Talk to whoever you want. You don't say that in the media. You're building excuses in for your players, and so they're always looking around for flags and ways to be bailed out. Mm-hmm. It's a loser's mentality, and you wonder why they haven't been able to cash in big moments historically throughout their time with Jim Harbaugh as a head coach because of reasons like this. Mm-hmm. Again, credit to them for fighting back and scoring at the end of last week's game against an unranked Penn State team. That's great. But if you think they're not looking ahead to this game against Ohio State, you're insane. They are looking. They have been looking for. They are 100% looking ahead. They have to go on the road. Mm-hmm. Maryland is. What I'll say about them against Michigan State is they were two mistakes. I mean, they were too fast, too furious, two intentional groundings. And one really bad red zone interception away from that being a very real game and then putting up 35-ish points. Again, Michigan's obviously the more talented team. I'm sure they'll run the ball a billion times down Maryland's throat. But Maryland is a stupid enough, weird enough, chaos enough team that if they were to somehow find a way to jump out to like a 14-0 lead out of nowhere, I think this game gets interesting for Michigan. I think Michigan wins, don't get me wrong, but this one, I haven't heard anybody saying, uh-oh, trap, like, because I don't think it's a quintessential trap game, but I think it should be given a little bit more attention than it's being given right now.
That's very fair. And Maryland, 5-5, needs to pick up a win to go bowling. You know, we mentioned they're a bowl team. We're on a crash course for Maryland versus Rutgers for both 5-6. That is almost assuredly happening. But, you know, who's to say Rutgers doesn't steal one from a Penn State team that has nothing to play for? Who's to say that, you know, Maryland says, why not right now make a program win? Like, Loxley's got, there's talent on that roster, not nearly at Michigan's level. Do not get me wrong. They got a few guys. As you mentioned, they're a few plays away, but that's just Maryland football. They're always right. A few plays away. So that leads us to a segment we've never had before, and we'll go quickly, but it just because we've never had it before, and I don't know if we'll ever have it again. A Heisman. The fact that we get to talk about Heisman candidate, Kenneth Walker III, who not just is a candidate, a leading candidate, because the media is seemingly on his side. The media appreciates how good he is, whereas it's a little more difficult to prop up Bryce Young, Alabama's quarterback, C.J. Stroud, Ohio State's quarterback, who are having phenomenal years. Do not get me wrong. But I think the media looks at that and says they're kind of propped up a little bit by some incredible athletes around them, whereas Kenneth Walker – is doing a lot of heavy lifting. And, you know, Matt Corral and Kenny Pickett are both absolutely Heisman candidates. But at this point in time, it's hard for me to see either of those guys breaking into the top three. Unless they just put up some 500-plus yard game. Like, I don't know what they'd have to do.
But it doesn't even matter, I don't think, for those two. Like to me, they don't have the stage. Like, at this point.
Programs. Because. They don't have the programs either, right?
I think it's the stage. I mean, at this point, we're talking about Alabama, Ohio State, and Michigan State, which is weird to mention those three in the same breath. But, I mean, Bryce Young still has incredible numbers. And if he goes out and, you know, beats Auburn, he's still got games against Auburn and Georgia on the schedule. Yep. You better believe that if they find out, if he puts up big games and they beat Georgia, he's going to find his way there. Same for C.J. Stroud. He's got games against Michigan State and Michigan and then potentially a Big Ten championship out there. If he goes up and lights it up, you know, if both of those things happen, it'll be a two-horse race between the two of them. But
however,
Kenneth Walker is very much in this discussion, though. I mean, if
where are their games against?
Exactly, against Ohio State and Penn State and then, you know, maybe more after that. I think ultimately if they lose to Ohio State, he's probably not going to win it. even if he goes out and has a huge game, like assuming one of these other two quarterbacks, like let's just say Stroud has this massive game and then they beat Michigan. It's going to be a very like Mark. If you remember the year Mark Ingram won it, it was because like nobody else was that good. Like I remember when he won, people being like, really? Like he won Kaiser?
Yeah.
And guess what? Kenneth Walker's having a better season than him and Derrick Henry at this point, just for the record. He's been remarkable, almost 1,500 yards and like 17 touchdowns to this point. If he goes out and has 150 and two touchdowns against Ohio State, which it is not unreasonable to think that he can do, by the way, just with the way their defense is played, he's got a shot. I mean, if they were to somehow win, if they go to the Big Ten championship game, I mean, I guess my final point on this is whichever one of these three guys teams does the best, I think that's who ultimately wins. And that's how it should be because whoever's team does the best will in all likelihood be doing it because of one of, these three guys. So pretty incredible company. I will say what this does from a publicity standpoint, from a recruiting standpoint, from a program marketing standpoint is – From a guy getting drafted higher, having the words Heisman finalist like associated with the program, like that is a level that I didn't ever really anticipate Michigan State getting to. I just never really saw it coming. And I will say the one thing you have to give Kenneth Walker over any either of these other guys, and again I think it all is really kind of starting now. He's got Heisman moments. He's got he's got the dapping up Speedy Naylor on the 93-yard touchdown run, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. And then he's got the game against Michigan. I mean, I'm not going to say good because we don't use that word. That's a not bad team. And he had five touchdowns and 150 something yards.
Just stud.
Carried Michigan State to that win. And
you're right, like, man.
It's there for him.
He's special. He's a generational running back for Michigan State. He's someone that comes around every 35 years, right? If you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Basically what happened, I guess, Lorenzo White back in the mid-80s. So it's right there. He's right there. And you mentioned recruiting. Recruiting now doesn't just mean high school. It means transfer portal.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't think that you can translate. Think about all the people that are going to hit the transfer portal. Who are they calling first? Mel.
Right?
They're calling Mel.
Oh, my God. He's the transfer portal guy now. That's the beauty. That's the beauty of what Kenneth Walker, amongst many others.
And
that's
Crouch.
The beauty of what he – Crouch, Kimbrough, Ronald Williams. I mean, there are – shit, you could even go – it wasn't a Mel guy, but Jaden Reed.
Jaden Reed, sure.
I mean, it's the amount of success that he's been able to have has been incredible. And now we're Portal U. And there are guys, one name I'll float out there who was in on an official visit last weekend was former Wisconsin recruit, four-star running back Jalen Berger, who, one of those guys who Saeed Khalif recruited. And was one of those top two or three recruits that they ever got. Now in the transfer portal, was at Michigan State. Got to think he probably likes what he sees out of how the offense uses the running back. Just going to throw that out there.
Yep. So more fun to come in that. And stay tuned for recruiting news. I think there might be some more big stuff happening soon. Sure. Check out the Twitter feed. Okay, so we got to jump into this game. Biggest game of the year. College football.
Quick. Play. Wait.
Oh.
Commercial break.
Oh, my gosh. Yep.
That's right. All right. 3, 2, 1. Now we're back. Okay. It's time. Let's go.
College game day. Columbus. 11 a.m. ABC. You tell us, you said it this summer, that this game has playoff implications. We say, yeah, probably. Ohio State's probably in it. Yep. And you're like, no, for both teams. And we're like, oh, that's cool. Is there like a new invitational involved? because surely Michigan State is not a playoff contender. Well, friends, the dream season continues. Spartans have been big underdogs in Columbus before and have come out on top. 1998 comes to mind, 2015 more recently. But this year, different team, a team that probably won't be able to get as lucky with the weather to muck things up this Saturday. But who knows? There could be some D'Antonio voodoo that takes place. And, you know, at the beginning of the year, this was an automatic loss. There's no way Michigan State can compete with this Ohio State team. Today, I can map out for you how Michigan State could win. And that's something I could not hand on heart done honestly 3 months ago.
Yeah, it's insane. This is the one I've had, like you said, circled in pen Sharpie at the beginning of the year, saying 100% chance Michigan State will not win this game. But to your point, there is it's not this foregone conclusion anymore. Now, again, Vegas might feel differently because currently the line sits at Ohio State being favored by 19 points, nearly three touchdowns. That's a lot of points.
A lot of points. I'll tell you, though.
That's a lot of points.
I'll tell you, that's a lot of points. And you know, do what you will with that information, and maybe they do cover. But 19 points translates to a 97.3% win percentage for college football. Okay? Computers, including ESPN's FPI, Team Rankings, SP Plus, 538, their average says there's a 13% chance that Michigan State wins this game. No, that's more of a 14 to 14.5 point underdog. So just take that with what it is. That's just what computers are saying. I will tell you, Austin, as you mentioned, that path for Michigan State to win is predicated on a couple of guys that didn't play against Maryland playing in this game.
Yes.
First and foremost, Quavo Crouch, who the speed that is on Ohio State's team is unmatched, unlike anything that MSU has played. Even undisciplined Miami can't match the speed that Ohio State has. You're going to need your fastest guys on the field, especially at the linebacker position. Quavo Crouch is going to be relied on very heavily this game.
Yeah, he's a must-have. Even an 80% of him is needed to be having. And I don't have any insider information. I know he was kind of like a game-time decision for this last week. I've got a feeling that if it was a game-time decision, they were never actually going to play him and save him for the following week, hoping that they could beat Maryland. They've managed to do it, relied on the depth. You know, and it's just – you need – we've talked about it earlier in this podcast, but, like, that athleticism is needed not only to tackle the receivers that are going to get the ball in space, but to tackle the running back. I mean, Travion Henderson is a star. The running back for Ohio State is the true freshman is a freak. He's already over 1,000 yards rushing this year, 14 touchdowns.
Not a lot of touches.
Not a ton of touches, only 141 carries. I mean, this dude just rips off chunks. That's what he does. He averages 7 yards a carry. I mean, that's how concerned you have to be with the passing offense for Ohio State, is that he's kind of the secondary portion. We've seen old Ohio State offenses where it was, you know, much more run-focused. This offense is passing with a dash of running. And that passing comes from C.J. Stroud, who is could very, very well be your Heisman finalist. He's completing almost 70% of his passes, has 30 touchdown passes to only 5 picks, over 3,000 yards. I mean, he's lighting it up. I think what's come back to hurt him, and the only games that they've had that have been even remotely close have been when he has made mistakes. I mean, if you look at the game against Nebraska that they still ended up winning by 9, he threw 2 interceptions, also ended up throwing for over 400 yards. Against Oregon, threw an interception. They ended up losing that game. Minnesota, they gave up 31 points. He threw a pick. Same type of deal. Now, the only two picks he's thrown since September 18th were in that Nebraska game. So he doesn't make a ton of mistakes. Now, one thing I will say is, you know, let's keep talking about their offense. Personnel-wise, their receivers are absurd. That might be, to me, the craziest thing about this team. So when you think of this team, you think of Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, right? Like those are the first two guys that jump out at you. They are second and third on the team in receiving receptions and yardage. Their highest reception, their player with the most receptions and the most yardage is Jaxon Smith-Njigba. That isn't fair. That shouldn't be allowed. I think we should ban that. Get rid of it. That's insane. Olave has 11 touchdowns. He's a huge red zone target, and honestly, they make huge plays outside of the red zone all the time. Garrett Wilson might be the first wide receiver selected in this year, upcoming year's draft. He's a star. But Smith-Njigba, again, big play guy, has a 75-yard touchdown to his name, an absolute star. So this team, skill position-wise, is absolutely loaded.
So, Austin, this, you know, weirdly – is something that the MSU's defense is going to try and can take advantage of the containing of it. That's such an odd sentence, but think of it this way. MSU is going to say Trevion Henderson is not going to beat us. And they say that to every running back. Okay. You're not going to pop a big one on us. And your quarterback has to be comfortable throwing the ball 50 times a game. Bad news. CJ Stroud can and does and is really good. Well, the big takeaway here is if MSU is not letting Trevion Henderson beat you, they still have a shot. If Trevion Henderson is ripping off big yardage, I don't even know, man. I don't see a path, but that's step one. You know, take that away. Step two, nothing over the top. CJ Stroud is going to have 450 yards passing this game. That's happening. Okay.
Yep.
That's happening. Now, it's got to – you all the athletes you described, the unfair embarrassment of riches of athletes they have is just going to – MSU's defense is going to say, keep it in front. You're going to get your yardage in chunks, and we're going to play the second – there are two games on defense. The game before the red zone, which you it's a win if they get to – if they didn't score before getting to the red zone. And you get to the red zone, then the second game happens. And you're playing to hold them to a field goal. Also not great news, Ohio State's fantastic in the red zone. So that's where you start to unleash, you know, those corner blitzes, the exotic packages. And this game, I think you're going to start to see Michigan State's defense start to break some trends and tendencies with those corner blitzes because some of them are becoming a little obvious. If they're becoming a little obvious to fans, then that's bad. So that's going to get cleaned up. You're going to see some funny new looks and try and make CJ Stroud have to make a quick decision. And when CJ Stroud, he is fantastic, but Austin, he's still a freshman and makes freshman mistakes. He screws up. He did it against Nebraska more than once in crunch time. He messed around against Purdue even. And before that, he just left a few things to be desired against Penn State. Ohio State's fantastic on offense. And Michigan State's going to have to contain, keep it in front of them, hold on for dear life in the red zone. And when CJ Stroud does make that mistake, it has to be, you have to make them pay. You have to make points out of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's no settling for field goals. And I do think one thing is that Stroud, while he has certainly settled in more as the year has gone on, I think the numbers – listen, at the end of the day, he has three future NFL, potentially three first-round draft picks as his main receivers. They're great after the catch. The offense is designed incredibly well to get him making easy throws down the field. Listen, he's playing a loaded team. So, you know, you do have to sort of take what he does with a slight grain of salt because when you watch him, he doesn't always look like he's the most confident. He doesn't always deliver the ball, you know, with that level of that, you know, what you might get from a junior or a senior with a ton of experience, because he's still a very inexperienced player. This is his first season as a starter, and I think it's fair to say this will be the biggest game of his career to this point. And that shouldn't be lost on anybody either. Now, he's obviously very talented, and he has a ton of talent around him. He's been playing really well, so you can't count on that, you know, being a big reason why you may or may not win. But it is a fact. It's certainly something to be considered. And to your point, when he makes those mistakes, Michigan State cannot settle for field goals. They cannot turn the ball over on their own. They cannot do things that they have done in other games. They have to score touchdowns. They have to, if at all possible, try to control the clock. And I'm taking these things away from not only just sort of like, you know, common sense football watching, but I'm looking back at what Oregon did. The only team to beat Ohio State. And again, this was Stroud's third game as a starter. But if you look at his box score, he threw for 484 yards and three touchdowns and only one pick. It's hard not to look at that. See Smith and Jigba with seven catches for 145, two touchdowns. Olave with 12 for 126. Garrett Wilson for 8, 117 and 1. It's hard not to look at that and think, holy crap, he had a great day. His team only scored 28 points.
Yep.
And they only ran the ball for 128 yards. What Oregon did defensively is what Michigan State, actually on both sides of the ball, but defensively especially to me is really interesting, because they made Stroud throw the ball 54 times. I think that's the second or third most he's thrown the entire season. So they made him be relatively inefficient, all things considered. They forced him into a mistake, and they were able to slow the running game down. In those things, the longest rush that Ohio State had that day was 21 yards. If Michigan State can do that alone, I think that's a big win for them. So copying that defensively, I think, is going to be huge. You're going to be looking at a box score, no matter what the end score is here. These stats for the receivers are probably going to be relatively similar, to be honest with you.
Yep.
Now, if you look at the other side of the box score and we look at what Oregon did offensively, they ran the ball 38 times. Now, including the quarterback, Anthony Brown did run 10 times. Michigan State has not done a ton with Peyton Thorne, so that's a different angle here. But they ran for 269 yards and three touchdowns. That does include a 77-yarder for C.J. Vertel. But Ohio State hasn't stopped the run super effectively this season. And obviously that fits in well with what Michigan State does as an offense. So luckily for MSU, it's actually very diverse offense. But teams can run the ball on Ohio State. Yep. And if you look at what Oregon did, they not only did that, Anthony Brown, and I remember watching this game, he actually missed some really bunny throws, but completed about half his passes, 236 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. To me, that is a stat line that honestly they're going to need. Peyton Thorne's going to have to try to replicate, if not improve upon. And if you look at this game, it's actually not even necessarily a good example. But one thing that if I'm Michigan State, especially maybe not especially early or especially at any particular time, you have to do everything you can to control the clock in this game. Ohio State is, and I mean that more offensively than defensively. I think the way that they scheme defensively actually, despite what you saw against Maryland, it actually lends itself to controlling the clock, because you force teams to run more plays on the average drive. And again, if you can limit those big explosive plays from Ohio State and slow down the running game, you're probably going to keep them below what they could be putting out. They're probably not going to put up these, you know, massive, massive games on you. You might be able to keep them in, you know, the 30s somewhere. That's the goal anyways. And so if you can do that defensively, you're putting yourself in a position where you can at least give yourself a shot. Offensively, running the ball, we saw it back, and these are two very different teams. But when Michigan State went in there, Michael Geiger kicked the walk-off field goal, you know, did the windmill. The way Michigan State won that game, again, weather surely helped. They ran the ball. They controlled the clock. They limited the amount of time that Ohio State had to score, and they limited their amount of time to make mistakes. So, like, all of these things together are really similar to what MSU's got to try to do. You have that Heisman candidate at running back. If you can use him, use him. If you're running him, feed the beast. If not, pivot quickly, but you can't pivot into just throwing the ball 60 times in the game, because that plays right into their, right into what they want to do. I think MSU would be really wise to, and we've seen it recently, get Kenneth Walker the ball in space as much as possible, try to throw the ball out to him a little bit. This would be a really good name for Speedy Naylor to come back and give MSU that level of athleticism they haven't had without him out there. It's a winnable game, but man, it would be, yeah, it would be a hell of a win. I'll put it that way.
So, bad news, Ohio State, fantastic rushing defense, giving up about 106 yards a game. Good news.
So I was wrong.
Good news, Michigan State, would be smart to give the Heisman candidate 20 plus rushing touches and probably more. But what I'm going to say is they got to find other ways too. You saw Kenneth Walker struggle against Maryland. He didn't struggle. I think the offensive line was struggling, and Maryland is not a good rushing defense. If it's not there, and don't get me wrong, Kenneth Walker has a lot of home run in him, even when the play is not designed a certain way. Don't get me wrong. Ohio State's defense is so athletic that, you know, those cutbacks, those things will be there, and he can get yardage out of them. They just won't be home runs. That's okay. But I think my whole point is you're going to get him touches and everyone can be a home run. That's great. We've got to find other ways to get him the ball too. And you know, Ohio State's, as you mentioned though, their passing defense is not good, and not by design. And when I, obviously Michigan State's pass defense is not designed to be bad. It's designed to, as we already went in at in depth, Ohio State's not doing that. Okay. Ohio State's just straight up struggling. And so this is a game where you're going to have to just lean on your best players. Jaden Reed is going to have a day that we talk about for decades. It's going to happen. He's going to have to put up 100 plus yards. He's going to have to match or have as good a game as one of the Ohio State wide receivers. And then you talk about the athleticism on their defense. These guys are not great yet, but they've come so far since the beginning of the year where Kerry Combs was calling the defense, and they were really struggling and losing to Ohio State and you know, not looking great against Minnesota. They have come a long way, but the opportunity Michigan State has is, you mentioned, we have a few guys that may not have it all put together quite yet, but athlete for athlete can match Ohio State. And those guys are Malik Carr, Keon Coleman, and on defense, Tank Brown, who saw snaps in Maryland. It doesn't mean that they're going to come out and have fantastic games, but you can't expect to win these games, you know. I don't want to call out names. It's not worth it. But there are some guys that probably just – I don't see a world where Michigan State can win if, as example, we said Quavo Crouch is starting, if is not starting, is not playing, if, you know, Jaden Reed can't play for whatever reason, whatever. Kenneth Walker goes out with an ankle. It's tough. You got to have as many athletes out there as you can. Michigan State has a couple that haven't been used yet. I think you start to see those even more.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to also have to be – well, I think the key players in this one, I mean, you know, Peyton Thorne's going to have arguably the best game of his career, and he's been playing really well of late. Kenneth Walker's going to have to make big contributions. Jaden Reed, to your point, kind of the MSU's big three to this point, are all going to have to play their best game of the year. Another receiver is going to have to make plays. Someone. Trey Mosley's been rock solid this entire year. Some on Torrey Foster make a big play. You said Keon Coleman, Malik Carr. Someone's got to do it. Maybe even more importantly than that, MSU's got to have answers for when Ohio State's front four is getting home, because that is a really athletic front four, front seven. And they can't be taking sacks. I guess really my whole point here is that this is one of those games where you talk about the inches and you talk about what – good teams do to win games. MSU needs to just play their best game of comprehensive football that they have played all year. That means big punts from and great punt coverage from Bryce Behringer. That means cashing in on touchdowns instead of kicking field goals. That means winning the turnover battle. That means trying to control the clock. That means getting off the field on third and long. I mean, that means holding Ohio State to a field goal once or twice instead of letting them score touchdowns. All those little things. That means no stupid penalties. You know, all of these things. MSU's path to victory is narrow. It's there. It's bigger than I thought it was going to be, but it's still very narrow. And in order to fit that and walk that razor's edge, those peripherals, those things that happen on the margins, can't happen. They have to go in Michigan State's favor in order to win this game. Because, again, Ohio State lost the game, but they lost the game at home by a touchdown to another team that's number three in the country. And that is unanimously looked at as, at, if not good, certainly not bad. And that's it. That's all they've lost. Yeah, they've had some quote-unquote close games. They've won them all by almost double digits. Like, this is what was looked at as a shoe-in for the college football playoff at the beginning of the year, and certainly at this point looks the part that could make it now. Now, again, Michigan State can win this game. They absolutely can win this game. But in order to do so, they have to play very close to perfect football. I think it's doable, but the path is wider than we thought, but still certainly narrow.
Here's the final thing I will get on the board. One thing is that if Matt Coughlin is still hurt, it obviously is not a good thing. But if you take away the opportunity to kick field goals, it forces you to be more aggressive. And going for it on fourth down, you know, at the 30-yard line, you got to score points to beat Ohio State, man. So I don't even know if Coughlin is playing. You settle for field goals, you're not going to win that track meet. So I'm silver lining you there. It doesn't mean you score just like going for it on fourth, but it forces you to start thinking about the offense differently. You know, you're starting to think about it's third and eight. I don't need to get them all here because I'm going for it on
fourth. Yeah.
Right? You start to think about four opportunities instead of three. That's a different way of thinking. Something that Ohio State, frankly, is probably that would take anyone by not surprise, but it's different. The other thing is Ohio State's going to score. They're going to get – this is a team that is going to touch 550-plus yards this game. Even if Michigan State were to pull it out, that's happening, okay? But the culture, what Mel Tucker has been preaching all year, is perfect for a game like this. The keep trap mantra is perfect. This game's not over. It's not done. They scored. Keep chopping. They're moving the ball. Keep chopping. We had a turnover. Keep chopping. Like, you're holding on to your butts this whole game just to hang on for dear life. There's no better mental attitude that needed to be instilled prior than keep chopping. Because they're going to get theirs. You can't think about it. Move on. Get it back. And that is one of the main reasons I think MSU has a shot, is because they get punched in the face. And they're still in the middle of the ring waiting on you. That's what we love about this team. So they might lose, but Ohio State's going to leave this game and say, damn, that MSU squad, that green and white team came to play. And Kenneth Walker, no matter how many great players Ohio State has on their team on both sides of the ball, Kenneth Walker might be the best player on the entire stadium. You have that in your back pocket. So it's never over with him on the team.
Yep. Amen. I agree with you. This is, keep chopping. I mean, to your point, they haven't quit yet. They're not going to quit now. That's what this team's identity is. I just think you're going to see a team competing until the bitter end of this game. And against my better judgment, I will be in the stands. So.
Oh boy.
I'm trying to bring rain with me. I'll certainly bring energy. And if you're going to be there, you know, hit me up. I don't want to make a complete ass of myself in front of everybody, but if I have to and it'll bring a win, then that's just what I'll do.
We need it. Austin, you got to make up ground for missing the last two pods. So this is a good
really good point. Really good point. Really good point.
Tell them the plan. I think we deserve. We got to share. So okay. People might do it too.
Well, yeah. If Michigan State leads at any point during this game, there's a specific graphic that we
do it. Do it at the beginning of the game. Don't even have to be leading.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be at the beginning of the game. Maybe not. Find your favorite Mel Tucker meme. We've got a few. We'll tweet them out. And just airdrop it to anybody in the neighborhood near you if you are in attendance at the game.
Yep.
There's specifically one that's the cover of a Drake album that says, if you're reading this, Tuck coming. Yeah, I think if we could all do that at the beginning of the game or after Michigan State, if they go up at all, just to airdrop that to all of the Buckeyes around you would be pretty pretty good. Keep an eye on social media for more on that.
It's a good troll, you know, and that's the goal is, you know, we're going to win the troll game. That's for damn sure.
If nothing else, win or lose, we troll.
Austin, let's go get a win against Butler this week and then turn around and take the next step towards the college football playoff.
Amen. All right, guys, extra long one this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks, as always, for sticking with us. For John, this has been Austin, and we'll catch you next week.
Yep.